Okay, you're welcome. In thanks for joining us at the podcast. We were just talking there before we started to record about the continuing problems over speaking time in the Dáil, which is come into sharp focus again today, and it's going to come into sharp focus next week when the Dáil is due to return. So you're joining me here with Mary Regan, Paul Cunningham and Fiacra O'Kinney from our political staff, Joe McGrailey here. And Paul, you've been covering this today. You've been following it closely, the ins and outs. That meeting of the
Dáil Reform Committee. Here, just going to leave you flounder away.
Dáil Reform Committee, well, thank you. Is that ongoing?
So yeah, as we're sitting here on Thursday afternoon, this new committee created by the Dáil only last week is beginning to try and come up with a compromise. Now, usually standing orders wouldn't be a really interesting thing to start a podcast, but this one is slightly different because if you cast your mind back to last week, all hell was breaking loose, fire and brimstone.
Was only a week ago? It seems like a month ago.
But basically what happened was that opposition parties were so upset that TDs who were back in the government were going to be given opposition speaking time or able to speak from the opposition benches, that they basically just prevented proceedings from continuing and Taoiseach Micheál Martin being nominated. It just didn't happen. So 24 hours it was delayed. The reason there was some form of decorum came back was because they got an indication from Hildegard Nocton, who was the outgoing government chief whip, that a compromise was going to be hammered out in this new committee. But there was no text behind that. So we were always just wondering, is this actually going to be a deal or is it postponing it?
So a text came today, right?
Yeah, it was supposed to come at 2.
After a number of different meetings over the week.
Yes, but the actual text landed this afternoon. It was supposed to land at 2, didn't land. It was about 2:45 before it finally came. So anyway, I have it here. I won't read it all out, but basically there's two things. That this regional group, so that is Michael Lowry, plus three of his colleagues who are going to back the government in every vote, plus Matty McGrath and Carol Nolan, that they will be regarded as an informal technical grouping of unaligned members. So that's the first thing.
That's a new concept.
That's a new concept.
Aaron, I think, isn't it?
And then what they're saying is that standing orders should be amended to allocate additional time for leaders' questions. So that's when opposition get the chance to speak to the Taoiseach and Tánaiste every midday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. There would be no reduction in the allocation of time for any party or group. So that's it. Two legs to this. On the first hand, Michael Lowry's technical group will now be called basically an unaligned group, and then they're going to give more time to leaders' questions, which means that the opposition isn't going to be losing out. So that's roughly the proposal, and it has been universally slammed.
Right. What's the reaction from the opposition parties?
They're just basically saying this is not going to fly. They're saying effectively Michael Lowry is a government TD who's been basically given favours. Take Mary Lou McDonald, the Sinn Féin leader. Another stroke being proposed by Fianna Fáil. You cannot sit in government and opposition. She says this is an insulting response to what was agreed in the Dáil last week. She's not alone. Paul Murphy of PWP For Profit. Latest proposal from government for Michael Lowry to get leaders' questions. This is another slot for the opposition to hold the government to account. Utterly unacceptable. And one more before I lose everyone. Duncan Smith, the Labour TD, says there is a wide distance apart from the opposition wording to what we submitted. The government wording would allow this group to continue as a faux opposition grouping, and that's just not acceptable. So we're heading, barreling towards disaster.
Yes,
that's what's
happening. Yes, and Paul Murphy, I think, is on the plinth at 4:45, isn't he? He's going to be talking about this. Mary, it seems like we've come to this intractable problem. There's no solution to it yet, at least, and we're heading towards a Dáil sitting next week.
Yeah,
what's going to happen, do you think?
Episode number 2 next week of this drama. Like, the opposition are completely digging in here, as they did last week, and they worked very coherently last week. I suppose it all depends on how much road they reckon is left in this particular fight, you know. Their options are, you know, by the sounds of it, the government is going to come into the Dáil next Wednesday when it resumes and plough on with its plan to allow Michael Lowry
to vote, essentially, and win the vote.
It'll be pushed to vote. The government has the numbers and the opposition lose out. But then, like, what cards do they have? You know, they were threatening to walk out of the Dáil last week over this. And how much capital is left in it for them to go on with this? But I think for the government, it poses this very intriguing question, which is how much power or persuasion does Michael Lowry have over this government? This is all being done for him and his group, and it's an awful big cost, you would have to say, for Micheál Martin and Simon Harris to have to pay.
But isn't it the case, though, that lots of independent TDs supported the government from the opposition benches over the last number of Dáils? They were clearly denoted as opposition TDs, but they were voting for the government and with the government.
Yeah, there's always a number of TDs from the opposition benches, including Michael Lowry in the past Dáils, who will support the government on a case by case basis, on a vote by vote basis. But that's the key point on this.
That and
case
in the past, they would get speaking time.
They might get speaking time. They might maybe policies or whatever might be looked on more favourably in their constituencies or technical groups or wherever it might happen. But the big change there is case by case basis. Compared to going out just 2 weeks ago from right now, going out onto the plinth and saying we support this programme for government, there's a big difference now. It might sound like a nuance, but it's a totally different thing.
And maybe the sort of lack of transparency around all that in the past is now coming back to bite, because they always, you know, had, let's say, 90%, I think, of Michael Lowry's votes were with the government in the outgoing government, the previous government. But there was no formal deal. We didn't know if anything was achieved on his part in return. We didn't really know what the arrangement was. So now they're turning around and saying, well, you know, we voted with the government all along. But the key difference, as Fiacre said, is this time that they are, were part of negotiating the programme for government. And I think a difficulty for the government party, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael now in this, is that they brought the regional independent seven and the two Healy Rays into government thinking that neither group would then have the power, in the sense that if the seven regional independents walked, they'd have the two Healy Rays. If the two Healy Rays walked, they'd have the seven regional independents. Now, what Michael Lowry's group has very cleverly done, I think, is the regional group and the Healy Rays have joined forces, because Danny Healy Ray is now part of this would-be technical group. So they're almost working in conjunction in that sense.
Yeah, but I can't see them walking, though, either.
I think they're dug in. So maybe we have to look at somewhere else. So
no walking, but having the threat there.
I understand.
One is what's outlined by Mary Regan there, just that it's put to a vote. The government pushes it through, sticks its two fingers up to the opposition, says, do your worst. One other thing is just this technical group, non-aligned or whatever you want to call it itself. Currently, it's made up of Michael Lowry plus three other independents, Matty McGrath and Carol Nolan. To have a technical group, you have to have five members. They currently have six. Mm-hmm. But Matty McGrath signalled today that he had written a letter to Independent Ireland, who've got a technical group in the Dáil. Last December, he wrote to them saying, please, I want to join. And guess what? He never received a response.
Okay, so he said that publicly today.
So he didn't want to be in this unaligned group. So maybe if it was a case that Independent Ireland reconsidered and opened the doors, then Matty McGrath and Carol Nolan could jump over.
And then
Michael Lowry wouldn't have enough numbers to form a technical group and problem solved.
Mm. So that'll be interesting to see then what tumbles out over the next day or two, if that, by him saying it publicly today, it might get some response.
Is it a flag, Joe? Is it a flag saying, take me?
It certainly appears that way. Now, Fiacre, as you can see, he's tired out, because up until half past two in the morning, he was filing about the Shannon, and I can see you're bursting to give us the latest on the Shannon.
Absolutely bursting, and I'm sure the nation is bursting to hear the answers too. But basically, look, there's three different groups of Shannon elections going on at the moment. One has just completed, that's the National University of Ireland one, three seats. So Michael McDowell going in the first count, and in the past 20 minutes or so,
incumbents are back.
Yeah, the incumbents are back. So Ronan Mullen and Alice Mary Higgins. The Trinity College one, so Dublin University Trinity College panel is currently, our constituency is currently taking place. That's looking like Lynn Ruan and Tom Clonan, two incumbents, will get in, and then there'll be a fight probably between the two Green Party candidates, Hazel Chu and Oisín Smith, and then two independents, Hugo McNeill and Aubrey McCarthy, the social and housing campaigner. They're in a fight for that probable last seat, and that's going to get interesting later today. We're probably going to have answers on that sometime tonight, hopefully not 2 a.m. again. And then we're going to really start focusing on the five vocational panels here in Leinster House, and they're very complicated. But basically, they're the majority.
Tell us all anyway.
But they're the majority of the Shannons. Basically, they're mainly they're voted on by politicians. They mainly involve some politicians running and some interest group running. Those is being counted today and should have a final result tonight, is what officials were hoping for. And then we'll get on over the next 3 days, the bank holiday. Some people will have the best of fortune in getting to cover the Shannon election. restrictions over the bank holiday.
Yes, indeed. As other people are looking forward to the bank holiday weekend, some people will still be working on it over the entire weekend. And the count, I think, is expected to run into Monday, actually, isn't it?
Potentially into Monday, but let's try and speed them up a little bit.
And that first panel, as you say, cultural and educational, there's a few interesting people standing on that. Sean Kine, Aina Nilauna, the environmental activist. Thank you very much. Yeah. Leah Ni Riada, former presidential candidate, MEP for Sinn Féin, but she's standing as an independent, as I understand it. Mm-hmm. And also Pauline Tully.
Pauline Tully is an interesting one. She, if you remember, in the general election, lost her seat, fully expected to come back with Matt Carty. But whatever way Sinn Féin did it, there was an unexpected outcome. And Pauline Tully lost her seat. She's back now coming in on this particular panel. And I thought she was someone who, in her Dáil performances, was always someone to listen to, and I'd imagine she's only Sinn Féin candidate in that panel, so I think it's a strong likelihood that she'll be going to the Upper House.
And we do know, of course, that once the election's all finished, it'll be a chance for the Taoiseach to nominate his 11, Mary, and will it be foremost in his mind that he has a gender balance issue to address? You certainly were putting it to him yesterday at the photo call.
Well, it's a little bit down the pecking order if he finally finds his gender balance in his appointments to the Seanad. There was this whole controversy over three women out of 15 in total in the wider cabinet. And there was a sort of, we were led to believe that there would be a rebalance when the ministers of state were announced. Micheál Martin was quoted as saying that his government was working strong on gender balance in appointments of ministers of state and committee chairs. And privately, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael sources were quoted as saying, you know, that they would seek to redress the balance in the minister of state. And then they came out onto the steps of government buildings for a photo call yesterday. And there were 6 women out of 23, if you include the chief whip, in the minister of state lineup. And I did ask the Taoiseach a very simple question, you know, has the gender imbalance been redressed with your junior ministers? But this was a photo call only, so he wasn't able to answer that question.
Yes, he said he was focusing on the cameras focusing on the cameras,
and I noticed
because they've actually gone back though this time, because that's 6 out of 23 versus 6 out of 20, I think,
the last government. So things haven't improved at all, and the parties would say privately that their hands were tied to a certain degree by the low numbers, particularly in Fianna Fáil's case. It only has 7 women TDs to choose from, some of them first-time TDs, and, you know, that the experience mightn't be there for of women TDs. It's an excuse, but at the same time, given the sort of starkness of this image and given this whole, movement of, you know, if you can't see it, you can't be it, right? Yeah. What does a girl or a woman who's interested in getting involved in politics think to themselves that they see that image? It looks like politics isn't really a place for a woman to get on. And in that circumstance, you know, I think some bending off, they're not even rules, they're sort of
calculations
that are there. I mean, sometimes you have to put some calculations above others. And I think when it comes to gender, then it is something that this government now appears to be weak on, particularly when you look to the opposition benches and you have 3 women leaders in the opposition who'll be questioning them every week in leaders' questions. You have an opposition that's largely left, so it plays into this perception of a government that's in some ways maybe old, representative of an older generation, not exactly moving with the times.
Yeah, Fiacre, is this going to be something that this government is going to have to grapple with now? I mean, they've had a number of issues since they've finally got it together after all the negotiations. Is this something that they're going to be constantly faced with, dealing with?
Well, I think it is something that they are very, in a very literal sense, are going to be constantly faced with, because as Mary is saying, that at leaders' questions, certainly on Wednesdays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays, that will be the scenario, the card that Mary Lou McDonald's or Holly Cairns will have to play very easily, or Ivana Bacic will have to play very easily. If there isn't a huge amount else going on, they could drop in the fact that, look, there is a very clear perception, whether it's real or imagined, that government is representing one Ireland and opposition is representing another. Now, is it going to be to the forefront of a government's political minds over the coming months and and years, presumably. You would imagine that there seem to be crises and problems every week in politics, but it is something that is going to be there, and certainly coming up to any election will definitely be something that comes back strongly on the radar.
It does strike me, actually, this is all distracting from the big issues, like with housing. The latest we've heard that they're not going to meet the targets, they can't meet the targets, etc., etc. What do you think of that?
I think for a start, like, there was no honeymoon. This government has just got stuck. It's stuck in the rut, and it's stuck in weather, and it's stuck in gender, and it's stuck in standing orders, and it hasn't really got going. And yet at the same time, you're looking at it and you think, they're coming a cropper as a result of their own decisions. If you think of the senior ministries, as Mary said, 3 women out of 15 senior positions. But the other criticism levelled at the government was that it was leaning too far east. And that they didn't look after the West. Look at these positions for junior ministers. 20 of the 23 are outside of Dublin. 20 of 23. Like, it seems to have sort of like that one really landed. So we're, you know, making sure the rest of the country sorted out. And yet, if they'd taken Catherine Arda, who's Dublin, they could have balanced up that both geography and also improved the situation with regard to women. Just like opportunities were there, they're not taken.
The last government as well had, you know, paid huge lip service to gender equality. There was the Citizens' Assembly on Gender Equality. One of its recommendations, which was a referendum to insert a recognition for gender equality in the constitution, that was rejected. Of course, they went ahead with the 2 other referendums that failed. Then there was the Oireachtas Committee on Gender Equality. Its final report was called An Unfinished Democracy. And there was a lot of recommendations when it published its final report in 2022. One of them, state-funded childcare. One of them, a review every 5 years of the gender quotas. A lot of recommendations along those lines. And of course, that report very much gathering dust. So gender equality was a big part of...
Because we do have 40% candidates now are female. They have to be. It's mandated by the rules in the general election.
Yeah, but that was...
They didn't get elected.
That
clearly,
was there 40%. At the time. But this committee recommended is that they kind of, the electoral commission, review this gender quotas to see if they're working, how they're working, what other aspects are needed. For example, could you eventually have a quota for state board positions? Could you have a quota for cabinet, you know? But that would seem very far-fetched. But that is the sort of commitment that was there in the last government, and it really all fell to nothing, really, ultimately. And here we are back again with what appears to be a government that isn't really putting gender issues to the forefront.
Speaking of other challenges that the government have run into, as Paul was saying there, there's a challenge going on in the High Court as well. This is the Pa Daly case that's been brought in relation to cabinet confidentiality and the presence of super juniors at cabinet. He's been down there twice, Fiacre. He's back down there on Tuesday again, I think. Is that something the government will be watching closely, do you think?
Well, I'm sure it's something that every party, not just government, will be watching closely, because obviously when it comes to court and when it comes to the legal requirements that Pa Daly is suggesting on this, that it could have big ramifications. So Pa Daly, in short, is basically, and Sinn Féin are basically saying that, look, he's been given the go-ahead to make the claim that it is unconstitutional to have super junior ministers sitting at cabinet but not speaking. So super junior ministers, they're saying, look, it's not part of the constitution, you can't really do it. That has been done sporadically in the past, more recently since. But
since
1994, Pat Rabbit, I think it was, who was allowed to sit at cabinet because, I don't know, Prontius Drossa might feel outnumbered.
It was the Rainbow Coalition of Fine Gael, Labour and the Democratic
Either he felt outnumbered or he felt lonely, I'm not sure what quite it was, but it has become more of a thing, really, in someone who maybe just falls short of a minister, but you know, maybe they want to promote higher than junior ministers in the last couple of elections. So this is something that's going to be on the radar. It'll be very interesting to see what numerous judges and presumably senior counsels make of all
this. Yes, and we leave it to the judges to make the decisions.
But let's make a decision here in the podcast. Let's just call it now, Joe.
It strikes me, Paul, that this could be leading to perhaps a referendum at some stage on the number of ministers that are allowed under Article 28 of the Constitution. I know it's Article 28 because I have it written here.
I was going to say, where did you get that from?
So it says 7 to 15 members. Could it be that a referendum is required here, so you don't have to have super juniors, you can have more ministers?
Why don't we actually have a look? Is it the case that as our population grows and we're heading to 5 million within a few years, that we really want to have a chamber of more than 200 TDs? Should we actually look at that? If you look at, say, a country with a bigger population, Ireland, Israel's got a Knesset of 120. Do we really need 174? Why should we continue to expand? What is the modalities that we're going to use? So is it the case that we're always going to increase? Maybe we could have more of a revolution and we could have fewer positions.
But it strikes me though as well, when you look at the briefs that each minister has now, I mean, you rarely see a brief as simple and as short as Minister for Finance. You see Minister for Rural, Gaeltacht, Sport, etc., etc.
Artificial intelligence.
There's so many different briefs and add-ons and subsections to any one particular portfolio.
Yeah.
Is it the case that we need more anyway?
Well,
I mean that's probably why we have
the government will argue that the work of government is become very, very complicated and technical and, you know, so many subsections to all the responsibilities. And that's one of the reasons they want, they need more ministers.
When we had the executive, was operating on the basis of a state which had just gone through a civil war with infrastructure and bits and, you know, industry
and
ruined.
How many sat on the executive, I wonder?
Very few. You know, but the point being is you can always make an argument for having more, but does it actually stand up? And like, where are you going to go with it? We need more, 200, 250, many do we need?
Plus when the complexities of government formation now that they might involve not only two parties, but a number of independents or smaller parties. And there's a lot of having to keep people happy in those government negotiations, the way things have become. So for that reason, there is a need, I think, to have those super juniors, as the government would see it. You know, Leo Varadkar, I think in his column in the Sunday Times, said something along the lines of the government was constrained by the constitutional provision for just 15 cabinet ministers, and he got around this by appointing super juniors.
I think that's been cited in the case, actually, in the High Court.
And some would argue, you know, the constitution isn't there to be got around. But that is one of the reasons is the complexity of government formation.
I think there is maybe a perception from certainly a percentage of members of the public who might look at all this and say, oh, okay, we understand that, you know, ministers' jobs are getting more complicated and more difficult and we need more people in. But a lot of people might look at this and say, well, is this not just kind of a little bit of jobs for the boys, a little bit of, as you say, like keeping everyone happy in any government formation talks, and that's the real reason that you suddenly need more than a couple of super junior ministers, or you need to have as many as possible junior ministers and as many as possible ministers in place. That would be a counter argument that's made maybe outside Leicester House.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens, because one of the things he's citing as well in this challenge is the whole notion that cabinet confidentiality has to be completely protected and constitutionally protected, except in very exceptional circumstances.
Not good for media
as well. It occurred to me, Paul, if this is, obviously it's going to go through the courts, there'll be something said about it at some stage.
Well,
it will make ministers look askance again, perhaps at leaking anything, if in fact they do leak.
What minister would leak? We do know that there was a rule of the last cabinet where phones were left outside. You know, so that says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, things have gone a bit mad through COVID because everyone was so eager to find out what decisions were being made.
Not that I would know anything about information flowing from the cabinet. What I would say is that the government was very clear to say that their sort of defence in relation to this is that, one, this has been going on for 50 years. You can go back to the first super junior since 1972. Secondly, that if you did have the strict interpretation, which you're just asking about, then would the Secretary General of the Department of the Taoiseach able to be there? Could the Attorney General be there? Would they have to be outside the door as well? Suggesting, without stating it, that it's pretty ridiculous. And then the third issue they're sort of saying is that, once again, if you look up in Northern Ireland, if you look at Belfast, if you look at the Assembly, guess what? They got super juniors up there as well.
Okay, well, we'll leave it to the courts to find out. It'll be back in the High Court, I think, on Tuesday again. Thanks very much, everybody, for tuning into the podcast. If you have done, we appreciate your listening to us, and we will be back again next week.